It is now time for our first segment, ladies and gentlemen. Open Forum Community Talk. She did not have to die the way she died, ladies and gentlemen. Many of you must remember this name, Jodian Ferrin. And we want justice for Jodian, ladies and gentlemen, who now should be held responsible for her death. There are four hospitals that are involved, their doctors and medical officials. Her story is filled with missing links and misinformation. My special guest, a contributor to Groovin' Radio, retired FBI special agent and attorney at law, Mr. Will Radigan. Good evening, Mr. Radigan. How are you?
Good evening, Raskam. I'm doing quite well. Good evening to you, your listening audience as well.
As I welcome you, Mr. Radigan, we were privileged to a small documentary which was done by Nationwide News. And we watched this documentary, and you did some investigation on the death of Ms. Jodian Ferrin. Jodian Ferrin was at full term and was getting ready to deliver. But what many people didn't know was that Jodian Ferrin, her sister, and her friends were documenting her final journey to give birth. Mr. Radigan, when we look at this story from the beginning, when Jodian Ferrin got to Andrews Memorial Hospital, what went wrong? What went wrong, Mr. Radigan?
Well, let's start with what went right. What went right was she was due to have her child, mm-hmm. and her primary care physician told her to go to Andrews Hospital. Everything is fine so far.
Mm-hmm.
And when she got there, she had to wait a half hour to get a room.
Mm-hmm.
And when she finally got a room, she realized that it was a shared room. She was sharing it with another patient.
Mm-hmm.
And my understanding is that she began coughing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me go back. Let me just take a step back. Back in March of 2020,
mm-hmm.
Andrews announced that it would not care for COVID patients because they just didn't have the wherewithal to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And then a month later, she checked in to have her baby delivered. And the patient who was sharing a room with her, because Jodian was coughing,
mm-hmm.
it is the belief that that person called the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
She called the administrators. And from that point on, everything went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So everything went right with her booking the room and getting the room.
Mm-hmm.
And then once she started coughing, that's when it went horribly wrong until her demise.
Mm-hmm. So now that patient called the front desk, and it seems as if whatever she said, everybody thought that Jodian now is a COVID patient. Hmm?
It would appear that way because
yes.
the sources have reported to me that after she began coughing, and this, and by the way, they're also telling me that the coughing was as a result of the pregnancy, not
yes.
because of COVID, because
mm-hmm.
She never tested positive for COVID, and I believe she was tested at some point, maybe during the autopsy, but she was tested for COVID. She never had COVID.
Mm-hmm.
But after they called the hospital, apparently phone calls were made,
mm-hmm.
and once the phone calls were made, they were trying to, for lack of a better term, ship her out to a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jubilee, I believe, was contacted.
Right.
Spanish Town was contacted, and the University Hospital of the West Indies was contacted.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe University Hospital reported that they didn't have any COVID beds. Well,
mm-hmm.
how would they know that, you know, to prepare for a COVID bed? Because as far as we know, she wasn't a COVID patient.
So apparently somewhere in that conversation, COVID came up. Let's go back to Victoria Jubilee. Let's go back there. They said they didn't have any accommodation. They could not accommodate Jody. So the next place was Yui. Yui said they didn't have any COVID bed. But again, how did COVID got involved? Because up until this point, no one at Andrews confirmed that Jodian ever had COVID.
That's a good point, because we're led to believe that Andrews didn't determine that she had COVID,
mm-hmm.
but there is no evidence indicating that they didn't tell anyone
mm-hmm.
that she had or didn't have COVID, because we know that on the night she checked in, which I believe was April 23rd or the 24th,
mm-hmm.
that after the coughing was reported, the executive management of the hospital got involved because I believe her doctor, they wanted to ship her out, and her doctor threatened to call the media.
Right.
And the executive management of the hospital got involved, and they decided that they were going to keep her. But then, mm-hmm. what's interesting is that there is an organization under the Ministry of Health. It's called the Emergency Operations Committee,
mm-hmm.
and they directed that she be moved to Spanish Town.
Okay, but before you go there, though. There is a part in there that when they decided to keep her, Jodianne was going to have her baby at Andrews via C-section.
Correct.
Jodianne was told that she was going to have her baby via C-section. So now, here's this group that got involved, and then ENS, another hospital, came in play, which is now Spanish Town. But then Jodianne... families and cousins were told, and friends were told, that Jodianne will be delivering the next morning via C-section. Now, overnight, what really changed? Who made this call to ship out Jodianne from Andrews to Spanish Town?
Well, I'm being told that the matron of Andrews...
Mm-hmm.
He made a decision to ship her out. Now, Andrews, I must say that the attorney for Andrews Hospital denied the claim, saying that Andrews had anything to do with her being shipped out. And they laid blame at the feet of her primary care doctor.
Mm.
They're claiming that he was the one who asked for her. He, along with the Emergency Operations Committee,
mm-hmm.
Directed that she be moved to Spanish Town.
Which turned out not to be so.
Exactly. And further investigation have revealed that the matron, and I won't call her name, but mm-hmm. the matron of the hospital was the one who directed that this action take place.
Mm-hmm. So now, as Jodianne families and friends prepare to go to Andrews the next morning, on their way to Andrews Memorial, they got a call that Jodianne is not there. Go to Spanish Town. So now there is no C-section. Jodianne has been in the hospital now for hours, going through labor. Now, when they call Spanish Town, where did this mix-up came in now? Because if you're moving a patient who's about to give birth, who's in labor, and is heading to your hospital, there was no bed ready for Jodianne.
Right.
From Victoria Jubilee not taking her, from you saying that we have no COVID bed, and this mix-up at Andrews, now she's off to Spanish Town in labor. She got to Spanish Town. What happened?
Well, it's interesting because we're also told that the anesthesiologist who was supposed to help with the delivery at Andrews refused to assist. Then we're further told that an anesthesiologist on staff was prepared to assist. So I don't know what happened there between the two stories, but they put her in the hospital. I'm sorry, they put her in the ambulance, and she was, they provided her with medical equipment in the event that she, you know, was about, you know, that she would give birth
mm-hmm.
On the drive from Kingston to Spanish Town.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe there was also a midwife that accompanied her in the ambulance.
Mm-hmm.
But when she got there, for some reason, there was a delay. And I don't know what caused this delay, because they should have expected her because they were told she was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, again, no preparation was made. So she just sat there.
Now, here's the missing link. The matriarch, they say, now made that call. Jodianne was shipped off to Spanish Town. Did they got message that there was a bed? Because apparently there was no bed ready, and she was in the ambulance for over 1 hour and 45 minutes, almost 2 hours now. This woman is in labor. Almost 2 hours. She's in labor, Mr. Rattigan. And program note, ladies and gentlemen, my special guest this evening once again is retired FBI special agent and attorney at law. We're going through the details of what happened to Jodi Ann Ferrin. How did she die? She never had to die this way. Four hospitals, medical professionals, and doctors were all involved. Someone made a call to say Jodi Ann have COVID. There was no COVID. Someone made a call to three different facilities. Two of them said we wouldn't take her because one said we had no COVID bed and the other one said we have no room at all. So now she's on her way to Spanish Town. She's now at Spanish Town Hospital in an ambulance for an hour and 45 minutes. This is just so wrong, counsel. This is just so wrong.
Right, and after they decided to take her in, by the way, there was an issue regarding the C-section and the natural birth,
mm-hmm.
and that there was we were given the understanding that the difference in cost was natural birth was $50,000,
mm-hmm.
the C-section was $500,000,
mm-hmm.
and at one point it became an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm aware that her mom,
mm-hmm.
and I think some other relatives, they pointed up the money, saying, okay, if we have to do the C-section, the money's here.
The money's here.
So money was not an issue,
mm-hmm.
at least not as far as the family's concerned.
Mm-hmm.
But they were given the understanding that maybe they don't want her here because she can't afford the C-section. And then the money was forwarded, and it got there saying, okay, we have the money, we can pay for the C-section. And then the next thing you know, her sister and her friend, they're on their way to the hospital, and they got a call from Jodi Ann's primary care physician saying, don't go to Andrews, go to Spanish Town, because we're in an ambulance, and that's where she's going to have her baby.
Mm.
So, and after she had the baby, she wasn't doing well, from all of the accounts I've listened to so far,
mm-hmm.
and she was transferred to the University of the West Indies, the hospital at the University of the West Indies, the same one that said they had no COVID bed.
Okay, before you even go there, Mr. Rattigan, so now, Jodi Ann Ferrin waited an hour and 45 minutes in this ambulance. An hour and 45 minutes in this ambulance. All along the way, listeners, all this was being documented. I guess the authorities didn't know that Jodi Ann Ferrin's sister and her friend was documented every step of Jodi Ann's last moment here. And they were documenting this for a good reason. Jodi Ann giving birth. They wanted this. They wanted this to make sure that the memories live on forever. But then when all hell busted loose, even when Jodi Ann was on that stretcher, leaving out of Spanish Town, going to Yui, and she gave that thumbs up, and she says, pray for me.
Mm-hmm.
No one knew what was going to happen to Jodi Ann Ferrin. Now she arrived at the University of the West Indies Hospital. Jodi Ann was put in a room, and because they said they thought she had COVID or she had COVID, no one was in the room with Jodi Ann. So they were monitoring, as they claim, and this is claim now, they were monitoring Jodi Ann via camera.
Remotely. Mm-hmm.
So now, how did Jodi Ann Ferrin ended up on the floor and no one noticed? And how did Jodi Ann Ferrin died on the floor and no one noticed? Who's responsible here?
Hmm? Those are some serious questions. And they're quite telling, because she was admitted to the University of the West Indies, the hospital,
mm-hmm.
at the University of the West Indies.
Mm-hmm.
And she was, as you said, she was supposed to be monitored,
mm-hmm.
remotely.
Mm-hmm.
And someone was supposed to have been looking at that camera. Well, apparently no one was,
mm-hmm.
because they found her on the floor, dead.
Dead. Dead. The young woman.
The question was, well, if someone was watching her, surely they would have seen some movement while she was on the bed.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't occur. And it was sometime thereafter that somebody looked at the camera and said, hey, wait a minute, this woman is on the floor. And then they rushed in, and by the time they got there, she was dead.
Mm. Now, when we leave from here, now Jodi Ann Farron is dead, and all hell has broken loose. All hell has broken loose. Everyone now is trying to cover up their tracks. We go now where Jodi Ann is supposed to be doing, they're supposed to be getting an autopsy on Jodi Ann's body.
Mm-hmm.
And they ask for files. They ask for paperwork. There's no paperwork to be found. They said that the paperwork is going to take days. And once again, a threat was made that the media was going to be called in. So the paperwork that was supposed to take days, all of a sudden, it shows up, huh?
Hmm? Correct. You know, what's funny is that the family hired an independent pathologist, I believe that's a term, from Dr. Ford, and he wasn't greeted well at the autopsy. In fact, they didn't really want him there. And then when he started asking for the records, to say, okay, let's see the records from Spanish Town and the records from St. Andrews.
From Andrews.
In fact, I'm told that they were denied access to the records. And also, there was unprofessionalism on the part of the medical staff, mm-hmm. as well as the police, because
yes.
The police were called
mm-hmm.
to the autopsy. This was just chaos and confusion, things that you normally wouldn't associate with an autopsy. Unbelievably, these things happened.
So now this family has suffered the loss of a child, the loss of a sister, the loss of a friend. They're now being disrespected by the police. They want to throw out their pathologists. They don't want the family independent pathologists to be in there. Once again, a threat was made that the media was going to call in. The police were acting out of line. I mean, everything was just chaotic now.
In fact, Les Glenn, there's a report that a close family member called the police to obtain some records. And the response the lady got from the police officer was that, now watch TV, no, we can't deal with that. We deal with it later.
This was when Jodi Ann's body now was supposed to be transferred from the morgue at Ewing
right.
to a funeral home or right. to another morgue.
Yeah.
Now, that police officer who's responsible for those paperwork said, call me back. May I watch TV?
TV, right.
No. Is this how you deal with a family who is going through trauma now? Because by this time, the family is traumatic. The family is going through this traumatic phase. The police is not acting right. The hospitals are covering up their tracks. Everybody is ducking. The questions are not being answered. Now, when you look at this, Mr. Rattigan, you look at everything that you saw and everything that you did. How much holes is in this story? How many holes are here? Too many.
Lots. There, I see incompetence. I see negligence all over the place. I see unprofessionalism. I just see no desire on the part of the medical practitioners or the institutions to attend to this young lady, because the fear was that she had
COVID. And she never had
no
COVID.
No one tested her during that. Yeah, no one said, hey, you know what, let's test her. And just because, you may understand that Andrews, they came out with a statement saying we can't take care of COVID patients. Okay, fine. But you have a patient now that allegedly has COVID. Well, what would be the right and proper thing to do? Would be to get her tested, right? Because one of the things that they did also was they evacuated the area where she was.
Right. So after you evacuated the area, why didn't you allow her then? Because her doctor was willing for her to give birth there. Why didn't
Correct.
She give birth at Andrews? Because there was no one else around. And after
Correct.
she gave birth, why didn't you just sanitize the place? I understand you said you don't have the facility to accommodate COVID patient, but you didn't know if the patient was positive or not. All of this is just going off assumption.
Correct.
Now, do you think the family should now go ahead, because the DPP now says no charges will be filed? Do you think that the family should now go ahead and hire an independent investigator, because now that this documentary has surfaced, do you think that they should hire a private investigator to reopen all of this and dig through this, Mr. Ratigan?
You know, if for no other reason, to obtain the records. And I'll tell you why. The DPP came out with a statement saying that there is no, they cannot prosecute a criminal liability case because, and they gave the requirements. They said, first, you need a duty of care. Mm-hmm. Two, you need to show that there was a failure to provide that duty of care. Number three, you have to show a nexus between the failure to provide the duty of care and the demise of the patient, meaning the patient's death.
Mm-hmm.
And the fourth requirement is that you have to prove intent, that they knew about the risk and they intended to cause harm to this person.
Mm-hmm.
The DPP clearly said, look, she said, maybe I can... She said, one, is fairly evident, right? Because she checked into a hospital. There's a duty of care there.
Mm-hmm.
Two, she said, yeah, she could probably prove, two, that there was a failure. Three, she could probably prove a nexus. But number four, she said, I cannot prove that there was an intent to cause harm to this particular patient. Now, look, you don't have to, you don't have to have direct evidence. You have circumstantial cases, mm-hmm, where you can just take, you know, you can take this fact and that fact and you can stitch them together and you can come up with a reasonable conclusion as to what happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when I say a reasonable conclusion, I mean to satisfy the burden of proof,
right?
Beyond a reasonable doubt for mm-hmm. criminal liability.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the DPP decided that they weren't going to go down that road.
Mm-hmm.
If I were that DPP,
mm-hmm.
I don't think I would have taken that road. But again, I'm not looking at all of the facts. Maybe she didn't see all the facts, because remember, the files are missing.
Mm-hmm.
Because the DPP came back and the DPP said the family hired an attorney in Jamaica. The attorney started asking questions about the files,
mm-hmm.
and the files today, the files are missing.
Mm. And
the investigative files are missing. So of course you would need an investigator to find out, okay, you know, to do the basics: who, when, what, where, how, why.
And just to be clear here, Jodi Ann subsequently died from a hole in her heart.
Correct, caused by stress from the pregnancy.
A hole
and
no one knew that Jodi Ann again had a hole in her heart. So after putting this young lady through all this stress about COVID, having her move from here, there, and everywhere, and she ended up on the floor at the University of the West Indies Hospital and died on the floor, somebody, or quite a few people should be held responsible, Mr. Ratigan.
Look, you have to ask yourself the question, how could none of these professionals not know about this? I mean, she underwent extensive
medical care,
medical examination mm-hmm. from her primary care physician. And now also when she went to some of these facilities, she was examined as well. And then to hear at the end that she died from, you know, a hole in the heart, you start saying to yourself, well, wait a minute, how come nobody knew about this? How come nobody found out about this? How come nobody said anything about this?
Mm. Now, with the few minutes we have left, Mr. Ratigan, there's a lot more to this. And this is just the beginning of us trying to get justice for Jodi Ann Farran family and justice for Jodi Ann herself, because this won't bring her back. There is now a situation where Jodi Ann's baby father, who wasn't in her life when Jodi Ann gave birth, wasn't in her life at all. He's now an immigration officer in Jamaica, a former teacher who know a lot of information has now surfaced that this man is a predator. This man has a criminal record and was allowed to get a firearm with a criminal record. This man have had numerous relationship with students. He have taught at multiple schools in Jamaica. How could this be? How could this be that you have a predator teacher running around the island? Now he has a criminal record and he was still able to receive a firearm. And there's evidence on social media with him brandishing his gun, saying that he doesn't talk a lot, and he pointed a gun to say he let his gun talk. What kind of stuff is this that this man is putting this family through with the 3 minutes we have left, Mr. Ratigan?
Again, I tell you, this is an interesting case, and it's weird at the same time, because the father of her child, and by the way, the child is doing well for the audience. And it's my understanding that there's a custody battle going on.
Yes.
But the father of the child, who had nothing to do with the deceased, I mean, he was even called to the hospital at one point, and when she was going through severe trauma.
And him saying, can't deal with that right now.
And he said, I can't deal with that right now, right? It has come to light that he's a sexual predator, that he's, in fact, I believe he has had at least one underage student of his pregnant. At least she became pregnant at age 13 and gave birth as 14. And there's a deeper side to this story, because obviously there's some kind of cover-up done by the Minister of Education, because he was moved, I think eight times.
Yes.
Yeah, eight times, I think, in about 2 or 3 years. And some schools, he would last like 4 weeks,
2 months.
Or so, because he was constantly accused of molesting the children that he was responsible for teaching. And I think at the time he was teaching, he was like 30, I believe he was 30 years old. And he was responsible for teaching the 12, 13, 14-year-old children. And so there is, and as you said before, I believe in 2009, he was convicted of carnal abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And with that conviction, you should not have been able to get a license for a firearm.
Well, we saw what happened with the two former ministers of national security who have been accused of knowingly giving firearm license to people who have criminal traces. Now, could this be one of those cases? We just never know. But the evidence is out there. And what happened to the transparency that the Prime Minister spoke about? What happened to what the Minister of Health said? I mean, all of this just now go out the window? It brings me back to this now. This case should be reopened. The family should now go ahead and hire a private investigator.
Correct.
To go through all of this, because if all of this is documented and on record, and this is how you got to know about this, Mr. Rattigan, that you could have gone and done further investigation so we can have this conversation. Maybe Jamaica needs some FBI agents down in Jamaica.
Maybe they do, because even the baby father, right?
Mm-hmm.
He left the teaching profession and became a member of the immigration agency in Jamaica, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you cannot get that job with a conviction.
Or you shouldn't get that job with a conviction.
You shouldn't get that job with a felony conviction.
Mm.
And there are other things that just didn't. There are other things that didn't follow standard operating procedures as far as he's concerned, and what should have been done with him. And so the jury's still out on that. But I agree with you that the case needs to be reopened and from top to bottom, and then bring everyone in and get to the bottom of the story, because we're just scratching the surface.
Right here.
We're just scratching the surface. Yes,
we're just scratching the surface. And folks, we're calling for justice for Jody and Ferran. There is a diaspora conference coming up real soon. And my next guest later on this evening will be the global diaspora leader here from the Northeast. And I'm going to ask her, what is the focus of this conference? Because crime and violence have gone out of control in Jamaica. And we're not trying to scare anyone here, you know, because this is a case that all of us saw. All of us saw in 2020. And the family is still being dragged through the mud. Mr. Rattigan,
right.
I want to thank you so much. Because again, we're just tipping the scale here. There's so much more that needs to be discussed. And as I said before, this is the start of us here calling for justice for Jody and Ferran. I've never heard of something like this.
And let me just say this, Vasquez.
Real quick.
If we don't continue to press and put the pressure on the officials, nothing is going to be done. Because you know how it is in a lot of places, including Jamaica, where that's old news and they move on to something else. So we have to support the family in their quest to obtain justice, Jamaican justice, regarding this matter concerning the loss of their loved one.
Mm.
And not only that, this case screams for justice, because there's so many holes in the stories that I've read,
mm-hmm.
that I've watched, that I've listened to, because I've actually spoken to sources in Jamaica. And there's so many holes, so many questions still unanswered, that this case simply cannot be closed and put to rest.
Mm. And let me just put it out there, Mr. Rattigan, because I know you have spoken to Jordian's mom and other members of the family. So it's not as if you're talking without their side of the story and following up on what Nationwide News did with this documentary, so people can understand, get a full understanding of where you're coming from with your evidence and your talk this evening. Because the Prime Minister needs to understand this, the Minister of Health needs to understand this. When Jordian Ferran died, they said they want this to be taken care of, and they wanted full transparency. And 2 years later, we haven't seen any kind of full transparency. We want justice. We want justice for Jordian Ferran, former FBI agent, retired FBI agent, and attorney at law, Will Rattigan. I want to thank you so much, as always, for contributing to Grooving Radio. Thank you so much, sir.
My pleasure, Oscar.
We'll talk soon. You take care.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of Open Forum Community Talk this evening. We're calling for justice for Jordian Ferran, a young lady who went in to give birth. It was then said she had COVID. She never had COVID. She died because of a hole in her heart. A hole in her heart. One hospital said, we have no space. One hospital said, we have no COVID bed. The other one said, bring her. But they let her waited for almost 2 hours. And when she gave birth, she was shipped off to another one, the same one, who said they had no COVID bed. What happened? Who should be held responsible? You're listening to Grooving Radio. And my name is Rasklin.